I've been using a few words that are roughly synonyms: attention, awareness, and mindfulness. Mindfulness is the standard translation of what's considered this, at least in Buddhism, the kind of keystone or centerpiece of meditation. So I wanted to say a little bit about this. First of all, mindfulness is, it's the capacity of the human mind to direct attention to something. Often, the world stimulates us with sounds, smells, visual excitement, physical sensations, and so on. And wherever there's a strong, interesting, exciting, frightening, dangerous stimulus, attention tends to go automatically. And you probably had some experience of that in the last 30 minutes, if not the last 30, 40 years, where something happens and the mind goes there. Awareness is sort of grabbed by the experience. But there's also the possibility of this thing called attention, awareness, to choose what it pays attention to. And we've all had experience of this in life. There are, you know, the little cliche of stopping to smell the roses. Well, you stop and you focus attention on the roses, their smell, their color, whatever. We don't have to let attention or awareness be a passive or reactive thing. And in meditation, we learn to train attention or awareness to go to something that we choose. Generally, or any form of meditation, whether Buddhist or whatever, will take something as its object. There are a few examples. You know, some Zen people will tell you about objectless meditation, but actually, I'm not going to get into that right now, but it's not always so objectless. But most forms of meditation, you can take a mantra, a phrase you repeat, or a concept that you keep recycling. Or it can be a physical phenomena like the breath, or next week we'll try walking meditation where we focus on the movement of the feet. And we direct attention to that. Now, due to all kinds of habits, as well as some of our instinctual programming, the mind probably won't want to stay there that long. This is one reason we use the breathing, partly because it's natural. It's there already. We don't have to conjure it up. But also, it's not particularly exciting. And so, it's a good object to train with. There are other reasons, which we'll get to later. So when there's a sound, or the knee starts to hurt, or the back's a little stiff, or a memory, or we wonder what time it is, these things easily become the center of attention for a little while and we forget the breathing. So mindfulness is directed attention, and then mindfulness also is returning attention to recall whatever object we've chosen. And so the mind comes back, in this case, to the breathing. or it can be a certain point, like in the belly, solar plexus. A point I didn't get to in the guided meditation is the upper chest or the nose. So to direct attention somewhere, or to come back when the mind is gone off, which for many of you might have been a lot. And if your mind was wandering away or going off or daydreaming or whatever much of the time, please don't feel embarrassed or anything. That's pretty common. There are times when I meditate. I've been doing this for 20-something years and teaching it for almost 20 years. But still, there are times when my mind will just be spinning away with something I think I've got to do, or other times maybe something I'm annoyed with. That'll happen. And that's okay too. We can be somewhat, at some point we become mindful of the way our mind is caught up in something. And if we begin to see some of those habits with clarity, we learn important things about ourselves. So that's a third way that mindfulness works. So we're cultivating the use of the mind's inherent ability to pay attention, to be aware. And we're going to be training that using the breathing. And as this capacity, which is natural, it's inherent, is strengthened and refined, it can be used to explore more subtly other things that go on inside of us, say thought patterns, habits of mind, states of mind, and so on. And then also, as we cultivate this consistent awareness of what's going on inside of us, we also cultivate it about what we're doing. Now, just now we're sitting here breathing in and out, but that can apply to everyday life, which is important for most of us are not going to be meditating 5-10 hours a day. But this quality of mindfulness that we cultivate through daily meditation can then be brought into how we live our lives, so that we live with more awareness. When we act, when we speak, we do so with more awareness of our motivation, our intention. Am I speaking because there's something useful to say, or just to fill up noise, or because I'm nervous, or because I want to prove how smart I am, or whatever? Almost every action has some motivation, and it's through mindfulness that we get clearer and clearer about what we're doing and what the motivation is behind them. So those are a few thoughts on mindfulness. The kind of meditation we just did is called mindfulness with breathing. Other forms of meditation might work with other things. Various forms of mindfulness of the body, for example. But we'll be focusing on the breathing for these four sessions. That's my little spiel. And anybody have any questions about what we just did?
Yes? You were talking about hand positions earlier. You didn't mention this in this or meditation position. What's that about?
Like this?
Fingers, yeah. The first fingers. Is there an energy thing going on there?
These hand positions are usually called mudras. And the idea, yeah, if you link the thumb and forefinger, the idea is it creates an energy loop of some kind. If you're comfortable meditating that way, feel free to do it. That's more common in some Hindu or yoga traditions, and Tibetan Buddhism does some things with that. I don't personally do anything with it, so I can't say a whole lot more. But usually in Tibetan Buddhism, what little I know about it, they do different hand gestures called mudras, and that's the most simple one. And it's meant to connect with a certain attitude or inner kind of, attitude that one cultivates. So that's a slightly different approach to meditation, where you're trying to sort of summon up a state of mind and maintain it. Optimum is what you can do and what benefits you. So we could say generally if you meditate for 30 minutes, that's a pretty good period of time. Some people like to sit 40, 45 minutes or more, an hour. Others 20 minutes, 15. Partly it has to do how much time you've got, how busy you are and all that. When it's possible, it's generally good to wake up a little bit earlier than usual and meditate 15, 20, 30 minutes before you get into the day's activities. And usually if you do that, if you meditate for 20 minutes or so, that'll make up for waking up 10 minutes early. So you don't, by starting your day with a certain amount of calmness and centeredness, that'll make, by the end of the day, you'll be a little less stressed out or whatever. If you can meditate twice a day, it's kind of the more the better. But I say that with the caveat that it's what you can fit in a way that enhances your life and enhances the quality of your life. But I try to meditate twice a day, 45 minutes to an hour each time. But I live here, it's a little easier. No kids to take care of and no dogs to feed. So.
Can you talk a little bit about the Buddha's teachings about your eyes being open, not staring?
A little more about that. Okay. What I do is I kind of gaze past my nose like this. You probably can't see, but just by having some direction with your eyes, that aids focusing. But if you stare, it creates tension. So you want it to be a soft gaze where you're not focused. You're just directing the eyes without trying to see anything. So having a directed soft gaze aids awareness and focus without creating tension. And the staring creates tension. And most of us have more than enough tension. So part of meditation is learning to undo a lot of the attention, a lot of the tension we accumulate, and then it gets habitual. So parts of our body are always tense out of habit, but over the years things like meditation can release that kind of stuff. Does that get at what you were? Okay. There are some teachers in some centers will really encourage you to just sit still. I'm not one of them. I feel it depends on a few things, one of them being your own personal habits. some of us are pretty strict with ourselves, or very strict. And so we're quite used to making ourselves kind of suffer. And that's kind of my old habit. And so I've decided not to do that much when I meditate. So if there's a significant amount of pain, I'll sit with it for another 5 minutes and experiment with just breathe, what people call breathing into it. Even if it's in your legs, you're not quite breathing, but try to kind of have this relaxed, soothing movement that extends from the breath. And sometimes that'll relax things, or even the pain may be there, but there's a kind of openness around it. So it doesn't, you're not reacting to it much. You're aware of pain without reacting. So I'll try to do that, and sometimes it works very nicely, and even the pain goes away. Other times it doesn't, or it gets worse. And then I'll move my legs. That's where I feel pain. Some people have pain in the back or what, shoulders. And so a little massage might help and things like that, acupuncture. But we're not going to do that here. So I think, you know, kind of know your habits. And if you're the kind of person, other people, the teeniest little bit of pain, and, you know, they're going to get away from it as fast as they can. For them, to learn to live with some pain can be very useful. But not take it to the point where you hate meditation, because guess what will happen when it... if we reach that point, then we stop meditating usually. Or our motivation for meditations perhaps a little warped and masochistic. So generally, hang in there with the pain or discomfort for a while. Notice how when there's pain, we tend to stiffen up in reaction to it. So if we can relax that, the pain may actually not be so bad. But if at some point you're just obsessed with, this hurts, I hate this, then, you know, stretch out your legs, adjust your posture in a kind of slow, mindful way.
Can you talk about the significance of the bell, Santakara? Does it help you focus in the beginning, concentration? Or?
Well, I only use the bell when I'm leading a group. I think it sounds nice. That's it's a nice bell. Some bells aren't so good, but this is a pretty good one. But the sound does. It's a sound that's kind of clear. A good bell will be clear but pleasant, but it doesn't kind of stir you up. So it kind of gets your attention, but it's a signal, now we're going to meditate. So, and for the end, you know, there are times I'm leading a meditation and there's no bell, and, you know, to just say, okay, folks, that's it. It's a lot nicer to... So...